Osho, Seeds of Revolution, My Most Loved Gospel on Jesus, Commentaries on the Fifth Gospel of St. Thomas, Discourse Number 2, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India.
Bhagwan, Jesus said, Men possibly think that I have come to throw peace upon the world, and they do not know that I have come to throw divisions upon the earth, fire, sword, war. For there shall be five in a house, three shall be against two, two shall be against three, the father against the son, and the son against the father, and they will stand as solitary. Jesus said, I will give you what the eye has not seen, and what the ear has not heard, and what the hand has not touched, and what has not arisen in the heart of man. Jesus is very paradoxical, but meaningfully so. To dig in the meaning, many things have to be understood. First, peace is possible if everybody is almost dead. There will be no war, no conflict, but there will be no life also. That will be the silence of the graveyard. But that is not worth. Then even war is better, because you are alive and vital. Another type of peace, a totally different dimension of peace, is when you are vital, alive, but centered into your being. When the self-knowledge has happened, when you have become enlightened, when the flame is lighted, you are not in darkness, then there will be more life, more silence. But the silence will belong to the life, not to the death. It will not be a silence of the graveyard. This is the paradox to be understood. War is bad, hate is bad, they are the evils on the earth, and they must go. But you must remember, disease is bad, health is good, disease must go, but a dead man never falls ill. A dead body can deteriorate, but cannot be ill. So if you don't understand, all your efforts may create a dead world. There will be no disease, no war, no hatred, but no life also. Jesus will not like that type of peace. That type of peace is useless. Then this world with war is better. But many have been endeavoring. Their attitude is just negative. They think if war stops, everything will be okay. It is not so easy. And this is not
ordinary man's conception, even very great philosophers like Bertrand Russell think that if war is finished, everything will be okay. This is negative. Because war is not the problem. The problem is man. And the war is not outside. The war is within. And if you have not fought the war within, you will fight it out. If you have fought the war within and have become victorious, then the war without will cease. That's the only way. In India, we have called Mahavir the conqueror, the great conqueror, the Jinnah. The word Jinnah means the conqueror. But he never fought with anybody whom he has conquered. He never believed in violence, never believed in war, never believed in fighting. Why you call this man the great conqueror, Mahavira? This is not his original name. His original name was Vardhaman. What has happened? What phenomena has occurred? This man has conquered himself. And once you conquer yourself, your fight with others ceases immediately. Because this fight with others is just a trick to avoid the inner war. If you are not at ease with yourself, then there are only two ways. Either you suffer this unease or project it on somebody else. When you are inwardly tense, you are ready to fight. Any excuse will do. The excuse is irrelevant. You will jump on anybody, the servant, the wife, the child. How to throw your inner conflict and unease? You make others the responsible, then you pass through a catharsis. You can become angry now. You can throw your anger and violence, and this will give you a release, a relief. Of course, temporary, because the inside has not changed. It will again accumulate. It remains the old. Tomorrow, again, it will accumulate anger, hatred. You will have to project it. You fight with others because you go on accumulating rubbish in you and you have to throw it out. A person who has conquered himself has become a self-conqueror, has no inner conflict. The war has ceased. He is one inside. There are not two. Such a man will never project. Such a man will not fight with somebody else. So this is a trick of the mind to avoid the inner conflict, because the inner conflict is more painful. For many reasons. The basic reason is that you all have an image of yourself, that you are a good man. And life is such that without this image it will be almost difficult to live. Psychiatrists say that illusions are needed to live. Unless you have become enlightened, illusions are needed to live. If you think you are so bad, so devilish, so evilish, if this image gets inside, which is the truth, you are. But then you will not be able to live at all. You will lose all self-confidence. And you will be filled with such condemnation towards yourself. You will not be able to love. you will not be really able to move. You will not be able to look at another human being. You will feel so inferior, so bad, so devilish, that you will die. This feeling will become a suicide. And this is a truth. So what to do? Either change this truth, become a man of God, not a man of devil, become divine. But that's difficult, arduous, a long, hard path. Much has to be done. Only then the devil can become divine. It can become. You may not be aware of the root of the word devil. It comes from the same word from which divine comes. It comes from the same Sanskrit root, deva. Devil and divine both. The devil can become divine, because the divine has become devil. The possibility is there. There are two poles of one energy. The energy which has gone sour, bitter, can become sweet. An inner transformation is needed. An inner alchemy is needed. But that is long and arduous. And the mind always looks for the shortcut where least resistance is. So mind says, why bother about becoming a good man? Just believe that you are good. This is easy. Nothing is to be done. Just think that you are good. Just create an image that you are beautiful, heavenly. Nobody is like you. Even this illusion of goodness gives you energy to live. If illusions can give you so much energy, you can conceive how much will happen when the truth is realized. Even the illusion that you are good gives you life to move, gives you legs to stand, gives you confidence. You become almost centered, even with the illusion. And this center that happens in illusion is the ego. When you are really centered, that is the self. But that happens only when the truth is realized. And when your inner energies have been transformed, the lower has been transformed into the higher, the earthly into the heavenly. When the devil has become divine, when you have become radiant with the glory that is yours, when the seed has come to sprout, when the mustard has become a great tree. But that is a long process. One needs the courage to wait. One needs not to be tempted by the shortcut. And in life there are no shortcuts. Only illusions are shortcuts. Life is arduous, because only through arduous struggle growth comes to you. It never comes easy. You cannot get it cheap. And anything that is cheap cannot help you to grow. Because suffering helps. The very effort, the very struggle, the long path, that gives you sharpness, growth, experience, maturity. How can you achieve maturity through a shortcut? There is a possibility. Now they are working with animals. Sooner or later they will work with human beings. There is a possibility. You can be injected with hormones. A child of 10 can be injected with hormones. He will become a young man of 20. But do you think he will attain the maturity that he should have attained if he has passed through 10 years of life? The struggle, the arising sex, the need to control, the need to love, to be free and yet controlled, to be free and yet centered, to move with the other, to suffer in love, to learn, all that will not be there. This man who looks of 20 years really is of 10 years age. Only through hormones you have blown up his body. But they are working this with animals, with fruits, with trees. A tree can be injected and the tree will naturally come to flowering in 3 years. It will come in 1 year. But those flowers will lick something. It is difficult to see because you are not flowers. They will lick something. They have been forced. They have not passed through a seasoning. Fruits will come sooner, but those fruits will not be so mature. They will lick something. They are artificial. Nature is not in a hurry. Remember, mind is always in a hurry. Nature is never in a hurry. Nature waits and waits. It is eternal. There is no need to be in a hurry. Life goes on and on and on. It is an eternity. But for mind, time is such. So mind says time is money. Life never says that. Life says experience, not time. Life waits, can wait. Mind cannot wait. Death is coming near. There is no death to life. For mind there is death. Mind always tries to find a shortcut. And if you find a shortcut, the most easiest way is to create an illusion. Think that you are, that you want to be. You have gone neurotic. That's what has happened to many people who are in madhouses. They think they are Napoleon or Alexander or somebody else. They believe and they behave that way. I have heard about one man who was being treated, psychoanalyzed. He thought that he is Napoleon the Great. After many years, 3-4 years of treatment and psychoanalysis, the psychiatrist thought now he is absolutely okay. So he said, now you are okay and you can go to your home. The man said, home? Say to my palace. He was still Alexander. It is so difficult if you have become Alexander. To be treated is very difficult. Because what is going to be, even if you are treated and you become well, you are going to lose. One general found a captain who was always drunk. So he caught hold of him. The man was very good. Drunkards are almost always good. They are beautiful people, just on the shortcut. The general said, you are a good man. And I appreciate you and everybody loves you, but you are wasting. If you can remain sober, soon you will become a colonel. The man laughed and he said, that's not work, because while I am drunk, I am the general already. So that's not work. If I remain sober only, I am going to become a colonel. And why am I drunk? I am always the general. Then there is too much involved in the illusion, how can this man leave his illusion? So cheaply he has become the general. Mind finds shortcuts, and illusions are the shortcut. Maya is the most easiest and the cheapest thing to achieve. Reality is hard, arduous. One has to suffer and pass through fires. The more you pass through fires, the more seasoned you become. The more seasoned, the more valuable. Your divinity cannot be purchased in a market and cheap. You cannot bargain for it. You have to pay by your whole life. Your whole life is at stake. Only then it happens. You fight with others because this is an easy way. You think you are good, the other is bad, and the fight is outwards. If you look at yourself, then the fight becomes inwardly. You know you are bad. It is difficult to find a more devilish man than you. If you look within, then you find you are absolutely bad. And something has to be done. An inner fight, an inner war starts. And through that inner conflict, and it is a technique. Remember, it is one of the greatest techniques that has been used through the centuries. If there is inner conflict, then you become integrated. If there is inner conflict, then beyond the conflicting parties, a new center of witnessing arises. If there is inner conflict, then energies are involved. Your total being is in turmoil. A chaos is created. And out of that chaos, a new being is born. Because any new birth needs a chaos. This whole universe is born out of a chaos. Before you are really born, a chaos will be needed. That is the war of Jesus. And he says, I have come not to give you peace. Not that he is not come to give you peace, but not the cheap peace that you would like to be given. Now, try to understand his words. Jesus said, man possibly think that I have come to throw peace upon the world, and they do not know that I have come to throw divisions upon the earth, fire, sword, war. When you come to a master like Jesus, you come for peace. You are blissfully unaware that you have come to a wrong person. As you are, you cannot get peace. And if somebody gives you peace, that will be death to you. As you are, if you become peaceful, what that will mean? That will mean the struggle has ceased before you have attained anything. As you are, if somebody makes you silent, what that will mean? You have not achieved any self. And you are consoled with your situation. This is the way how you can know a false master and a true master. A false master is a consolation. He gives you peace as you are. He never bothers to change you. He is a tranquilizer. He is just like sleeping pills. You come to him and he consoles. But if you come to a true master, this is the criterion. Whatsoever peace you have, that too will be destroyed. Whatsoever at easeness you have is going to the dogs. He will create more turmoil, more conflict. He is not going to console you. Because he is not your enemy. All consolations are poisons. He will help you to grow. Growth is difficult. You will have to pass through many difficulties. Many times you would like to escape from this man, but you cannot, because he will haunt you. Consolation is not the goal. He cannot give you a false peace. He will give you growth, and out of that growth someday you will flower, and that flower will be the peace, the silence, the truth. Consolation is false. People come to me. I can see the way they come, the problems they bring. They want consolation. Somebody comes and says, I am in much difficulty. My mind is not at peace. I am very tense. Give me something. Bless me so that I become peaceful. But what that will mean? If this man can be made at peace, what that will mean? Then this man is never going to change. No, that is not the way. Even a real master consoles you, that consolation is just like a fish net. You will be caught in that consolation, and then by and by he will create the chaos. You have to pass through the chaos, because as you are absolutely wrong. At this state, if somebody consoles you, he is your enemy. With him you will lose time, life, energy, and in the end, consolations won't help. When death comes, all consolations will evaporate. There was one old man. His son died. He came to me. And he said, console me. I said, I cannot do that. That's sin. He said, I have come for that. I told him, you may have come for that, but I cannot do it. He said, but I went to this Shankaracharya. And he consoled me. And he said, don't bother. Don't be worried. Your son is born in a high heaven. I know his son also. That is impossible. Because he was a politician. They all go to the hell. They never go. And not only a politician, but a successful politician. He was a minister in a state. With all the cunningness of a politician, with all the ambition of a politician, how can he go to the heaven? And this old man was also a politician. And basically he was not disturbed because the son is dead. The basic thing was that his ambition is dead, because through that son he was achieving more and more and more and more. He himself has become old. He worked continuously his whole life. But he was a little foolish, not very cunning. A little naive. He worked hard. He sacrificed his whole life, but he could not attain to any post. And that was the deep hurt. It was a wound. And through the sun now he was trying, and the sun was achieving. And now the sun is dead. His whole ambition is dead. When I told him that this is the reason why you are suffering so much, it is not the sun. He was very much disturbed and he said that I had come for consolation and you are disturbing me more. It may be, he said, your whatsoever you say sounds true. It may be my ambition has been hurt. It is not for the sun that I am weeping. It may be for the ambition. But don't say such hard things to me. I am in such a pain right now. My son is dead. and you are saying such hard things to me. And I went to this Mahatma and to that Shankaracharya and this Guru, and they all consoled me. They said, don't worry, soul is eternal, nobody ever dies, and your son, he was no ordinary soul. He has reached to the high heaven. These are consolations. And if this old man goes on listening to these consolations, he is missing a great opportunity. He is missing an opportunity where he could have faced his ambition, which is his problem. He could have encountered that all ambition is useless, futile, because you work and work and work, and then death takes everything. He could have penetrated to this, but no, he stopped coming to me. He used to come to me. Since that time, he never came. He went to others who were consoling him. Are you here to be consoled? Then you are in a wrong place. That's what Jesus says. He says, men possibly think that I have come to throw peace upon the world, and they do not know what I have come to throw divisions upon the earth, fire, sword, war. Whenever a man like Jesus comes, the world is immediately divided. Those who are for him and those who are against him. You cannot find a single person who is indifferent to Jesus. Whenever a type, Jesus type is there, immediately the world is divided. Few are for him and few are against him. Nobody is indifferent. It is impossible to be indifferent to Jesus. If you hear the word, if you look at the Jesus, immediately you are divided. Either you become a lover or you become a hater. Either you fall in the line or you go against. Either you follow him or you start working against him. Why this happens? Because a man like Jesus is such a great phenomenon, and he is not of this world. He brings to this world something from the beyond. Those who are afraid of the beyond, they immediately become the enemies. That is their way of protecting themselves. Those who have a desire, a seed hidden somewhere, who have been searching and searching and longing for the beyond, this man becomes charismatic. This man becomes a magnetic force. They fall in his love. For this man they were waiting for many lives. Immediately the world is divided. Either you are for Christ or you are against him. There is no other alternative. You cannot be indifferent. You cannot say, I don't bother. That is impossible. Because a person who can remain in the middle will become Jesus himself. A person who can stand in the middle, neither love nor hate, will go beyond the mind himself. You cannot stand in the middle. You will fall. You will become a rightist or a leftist. You will be this side or on that. But he creates great turmoil, not only in the individuals, in the society, on the earth. Everything comes to be in a conflict. A great war starts. Since Jesus in the world, there have never been peace. Jesus created a religion. He brought something in the world which created such a division, such a conflict in all the minds, that he became the focus of all history. That's why we say before Christ, after Christ, he became the focal point. History is divided, time is divided with Jesus. He stands on the boundary before Jesus, as if time was of a different quality. After Jesus, time has become of a different quality. With Jesus starts history. His attitude, his approach towards human mind is very much different than that of a Buddha or a Lao Tse. The ultimate goal is the one. The ultimate flowering is going to be the one. But Jesus' approach is absolutely different. He is unique. What he is saying that through conflict, growth is achieved. Through struggle, centering happens. Through war, peace flowers. But don't take him literally. Whatsoever he is saying is a parable. Christianity took it literally and missed the point. Then Christians took the sword in their hands and they have killed millions unnecessarily, because that was not the meaning of Jesus. Then the church, Jesus' church, became a warring church. It became a crusade. Christians have been fighting, Mohammedans, Hindus, Buddhists, everywhere they have been fighting. But they missed. Jesus was talking of something else. He was not talking of the swords of this world. He brought a sword of a different world. What is this sword? It is a symbol. You have to be cut into two, because in you two things meet. This world, the earth and the heaven, they meet in you. One part of you belongs to the mud, to the dirt. One part of you belongs to the divine. You are a meeting point. And Jesus brought a sword to cut you asunder. So the earth falls to the earth and the divine enters into the divine. You cannot make any distinction what belongs to the earth. When you are hungry, you think you are hungry. Jesus says, no, take my sword and cut it. Hunger belongs to the body because it is a bodily need. Consciousness has no hunger. It becomes aware because the body has no consciousness. You may have heard one old Panchatantra story, that it happened that in a big forest, by accident, the forest caught fire. And there were two men. One was blind and one was lame. The lame couldn't walk, couldn't run, but he could see. And the blind could walk and run, but could not see. So they made a compact. The blind took the lame man on his shoulders. The lame could see and the blind could walk. They became one man. They came out of the forest. They saved their lives. This is not just a story. This is what has happened in you. one part of you feels hunger but cannot know it. It has no eyes to see. Your body feels hunger, your body feels sex desire, your body feels thirst, your body needs comfort, your body, all the needs are of the body. And your consciousness only sees, yourself only is a witness. But they have made a compact. Because without the body, the consciousness cannot walk, cannot move, cannot do anything. Without the consciousness, the body cannot realize what is needed, whether the body is hungry or thirsty. Jesus swore means this compromise has to be realized knowingly, and then a distinction has to be made. What belongs to the earth belongs to the earth. Fulfill it, but don't get obsessed. If you are hungry, the body is hungry, know it well. Fulfill the hunger, but don't get obsessed. There are many people who get obsessed. They go on eating and eating and eating. And then someday they get so frustrated with eating, then they go on fasting and fasting and fasting. But both are obsessions. Too much eating is as bad as too much fast. A right balance is needed. But who will give the balance? Unless you become two. Unless you are completely aware that this is of the earth and I am not of the earth. This is the sword of Jesus. He says, I have come to throw divisions upon earth, fire, sword, war. Why fire? Fire is a very old Kabbalistic symbol, very old Hindu symbol also. Hindus have always been talking about inner fire. They call that inner fire tap because it is heat. And to kindle that inner fire they call yajna. So that your fire is burning inside. And there are techniques how to burn that inner fire right now. It is almost dead. Covered with ashes. It has to be poked, discovered, rekindled. More fuel is needed than the fuel has to be given. When the inner fire burns in its totality, suddenly you are transformed. Because there is no transformation without fire. You heat water. At a particular degree, 100 degrees, the water evaporates, becomes vapor. The whole quality changes. Have you observed change of water into vapor? The whole quality changes. When it is water, it always flows downwards. That is the nature of water to flow downwards. It cannot flow upwards. It is impossible. But when at the 100 degree heat it evaporates, the whole nature changes. The vapor floats upwards, never downwards. The whole dimension has changed. It happens through heat. If you go to a chemist's lab, what you will find? If you take fire out, nothing will happen there. Because every transformation, every new change, every mutation is through fire. And who you are, except fire. And what you are doing when you are living. When you breathe, what you breathe? You breathe oxygen. And oxygen is nothing but fuel to fire. So when you run, more fire is needed, you breathe more deeply. When you rest, less fire is needed, you breathe less deeply, because less oxygen is needed. Oxygen is fuel to the fire. Fire cannot exist without oxygen, because oxygen burns. You are fire. Moment to moment, through food, through air, through water, fire is created in you. When it is too much, you have to release it. So you remember, in hot countries, people are more sexual than in cold countries. In hot countries, first books of sexology appeared, Vata Science, Kama Sutra, Koka, Pandits, Koka Shastra. They appeared first. The first Freudians were in the East. They appeared before Freud, 3,000 years before Freud. In the West, sex has just become important. In a cold country, there is not enough fire in the body to create much sexuality. Only within 3-4 centuries in the West, sex has become very important, because now the country may be cold, but the central heating is there. People are not so cold. Otherwise, the fire of the body continuously fights with the cold. That's why in the East, population goes on growing. It is difficult to prevent it. When animals have the sexual urge, we call them, they are on heat. It is meaningful, because it is a sort of heat. It is a sort of heat. When you have more fire that you can absorb, it has to be released, and sex is the outlet. The West is not so much in the population explosive. I have heard it happened that the first Russian astronauts landed on the moon, and they were very happy. But they were surprised. They saw three Chinese coming, walking there. So they looked at them and they said, "You have reached before us? And you don't have any means, any technology, any science. How you did it? You have done a miracle. How you reached here?" Those Chinese says, "Nothing like a miracle, a simple thing, mathematics. We stood on each other's shoulders and reached." Chinese can reach, Indians can reach, there is no problem. Once they decide, they can reach anywhere. Sex is a heat phenomena, a fire phenomena. So whenever the fire is burning, you will feel more sexual. Whenever the fire is not burning so much, you will feel less sexual. Because everything that happens in you, whether it is a sexual transformation in the body or a spiritual transformation, it depends on fire. So Hindus, Kabbalists, Jews, Sufis, and Jesus was trained in a Essene community. In a very occult, esoteric society, he was trained. They knew many methods of how to create inner fire. So fire is not just the fire you know. It is the innermost fire upon which life exists. if this fire can be raised to a particular level, that's why all the religions who use this fire are against sects, because that is possible only to bring it to a particular degree if it is not released. If through sex it is released, then it cannot be brought to a particular degree. Then you have an outlet. So all the outlets have to be closed completely. So there is no leakage of the fire, and it reaches to a 100-degree point, a certain degree. Suddenly the transformation happens. The soul is separate and the body is separate. The sword has worked. Then you know what is earth in you and what is heaven in you. Then you know what has come from your father and mother and what has come from the invisible. Fire, sword, war. A deep inner conflict is needed. You should not be lethargic. You should not relax unless the relaxation happens. And that is totally different. You have to fight and create conflict and friction. Friction is the right word for the inner war. Gurdjieff worked through friction. He will create friction in the body. You may not be aware, but remember it, someday you will become aware that your body has many layers of energies. If you are not in friction, then you use only the superficial layer. If much conflict arises, the superficial layer is finished, then the second layer starts functioning. You try it this way. You always go to sleep at 10 in the night. At 10 suddenly you feel sleepiness coming to you. Don't go to sleep. Sufis have used that method very much, and Jesus also used vigil. For the whole night he will not sleep. For 40 days and 40 nights he will not sleep in the forest. He remained on the hills alone without sleeping. What happens? If you don't sleep at 10, for a few minutes you will feel very, very lethargic, sleep and sleep and sleep, but you resist and fight. A friction is created. You have become two: the one who wants to sleep, the one who doesn't want to sleep. Now there are two parts fighting. If you stick and don't yield, suddenly you will find all sleepiness has gone. You have become as fresh as you have never been in the morning. Suddenly all sleepiness has gone. You are fresh. And even if you want to go to sleep, it will be difficult now to go to sleep. What happened? There was only two possibilities. Through friction, energy was created. Always through friction, energy is created. The whole science depends on creating friction, then energy is created. All dynamos are just friction techniques. How to create a fight, a war between two things? You create a war, your body wants to go to sleep and you don't want to go to sleep. A friction is there, much energy is created. If you yield, that will be very bad. Because if you yield, the body has won. And the consciousness has lost a fight. So if you try, only try with the mind that you are not going to eat. Otherwise it is better not to try. Friction methods are dangerous. If you try, then you have to win. If you don't win, you are lost. Because then you lose your confidence. Your consciousness will become weaker and body will become stronger. And if you lose many times, then the possibility is less and less to win. Once you use any friction method, then make it a point to win. It is not to be lost. The battle must be won. And once you win, you have achieved a different layer. Now you can see that if you win, the energy that was in the other part has been absorbed by you. You have become stronger. And then every fight will make you stronger, more stronger. And the moment comes when the whole energy of the body is absorbed by the self. Gurdjieff used friction very deeply and in such dangerous ways, unbelievably. When he was very old, just before a few years of his death, he made it happen, a very dangerous accident, motor accident, car accident. He did it. It was not an accident really, because in a life of a person like Gurdjieff, there is no accident. He is so aware accidents are not possible. But he can allow an accident, or he can even manage. He managed. He was a fast driver, and his whole life there has never been a single accident. And he was a very dangerous driver. All those who will sit with him will always be on the edge. Any moment. He was absolutely mad. Didn't believe in any traffic rules or anything. He will go this way and that and as fast as possible. And anything was possible any moment, but never it happened. And one day morning, when he went to Paris from his ashram in Fontainebleau, somebody said, "When you will be back?" He said, "If everything happens as I think it will happen by the evening. Otherwise, difficult to say." And in the by the evening when he was coming back, there was accident. And the accident was so severe and dangerous that the doctors have said that nobody can survive. Impossible. The whole car was crashed to bits. But Gurdjieff was found. He has 60 fractures all over the body. Almost dead. But he was found perfectly aware, lying under a tree, very far away from the car. He walked under the sedge, and he was lying there perfectly aware. He was not unconscious. He was taken to the hospital. He was perfectly conscious. He said that no anesthesia should be given to him. He wants to remain perfectly conscious. This is the greatest friction he ever did with his body. The body is just on the verge to death. He has created the whole situation and he wants to remain absolutely alert. And he remained alert. At this moment he attained the greatest centering that can happen to a man. He became centered in his consciousness. The earthly layer was completely separated. It became a vehicle. You can use it. but you are not identified with it. This is the meaning of Jesus when he says, I have brought fire, sword, war, not as men possibly think, that I have come to throw peace upon the world. For there shall be five in a house, three shall be against two, and two against three. The father against the son, and the son against the father, and they will stand as solitaries. For there shall be five in the house. This is a parable. In your body there are five in the house, the five senses, the five indriyas. Really, deep down you have five bodies, because each sense has its own center. And each sense goes on manipulating you in its own direction. The eye says, look at the beauty. The hand says, touch. It is so lovable. The eye is not interested in touch at all. The hand is not interested in looking at a beautiful person, a beautiful body, or a beautiful tree at all. All the five senses exist as five separate centers. And your mind is just a coordinator. He goes on coordinating between these five. That's why you look at me, you hear me, you hear from the ears and you look from the eyes. Eyes never hear, ears never look. Then how you conclude that you hear to the same person? How can you conclude? The mind goes on coordinating. It is a computer. Whatsoever eyes feed into, what the ears feed into, it combines it and gives you the conclusion. The method of friction which Gurdjieff used, which Jesus used, and those who know the innermost secret story of Jesus' life, they say that he was not crucified, he managed to be crucified. Just like Gurdjieff. He managed to be crucified. It was a drama that he arranged. Those who were crucifying him, they were thinking they are killing him, but such a man like Jesus cannot be forced to die. He could have escaped very easily. And it was well known that he has to be caught. He could have moved away from the capital or away from the country. There was no problem. But he came to the capital. It is said that he enacted the whole thing. And Judas was not his enemy, but his friend who helped. Who helped Jesus to be caught. And the whole thing was managed and controlled by him. This was the last inner war that happened on the cross. The last greatest friction. When he is dying, but not losing trust in the divine, when the earth is falling back to the earth, when the division is absolute, total, He is not identified at all. He allows it. Gurdjieff used to say that this Jesus crucifixion is a drama. And really, the author of the drama is neither Pontius Pilate nor the high priest of the Jews, but Jesus himself. He managed it, and he managed it so beautifully that even up to now it has not been discovered, not exactly discovered, that what was the matter, how it happened. And you cannot think managing your own crucifixion, but that is what religion is. Managing your own crucifixion. Going to the cross means going to the climax of friction. When death is there, Jesus says, for there shall be five in a house, three shall be against two, and two against three. A friction has to be created. The senses have to fight, and the fight has to be made conscious. They continuously fight, but the fight is not conscious. You are fast asleep. The fight goes on. The eye is continuously fighting the ear. The ear is continuously fighting the eye, because they are competitors. Have you observed that a blind man has more listening capacity than a man who has eyes? That's why blind men become beautiful musicians, singers. Why it happens? They have a more capacity for the sound, the rhythm, more sensitivity in the ears. Why? Because the eye is no more a competitor. The energy that was being used by the eyes is available for the ears. They are the competitors. And your eyes are using 80% energy. And only 20% for the other four senses. They are starved. They are continuously in fight. The eyes has become the supreme, the dictatorial force. You live through the eye. And some senses have completely gone dead. Many people have no smell. That sense has gone completely dead. They never bother. They are not even aware that they can't smell. The eyes has completely exploited the nose. It is so near, it can be exploited. Children have a smell, but by and by it is lost, because the eyes goes on using more and more. The eye has become the center of your being, which is not good. Methods of friction use senses against each other. Many methods use. The seeker remains with closed eyes for many months. The energy starts moving, you can feel it. If for 3 months you remain completely with closed eyes, you can feel that the energy is moving continuously towards the ears, towards the nose. Your smell may come back. You may start smelling. There have been seekers, methods, schools, where one sense is completely cut against the other. A fight is created. Then for 3 months close the ears and just see, don't listen. Then you will see that there is a constant movement of energy. And if you can see your senses in fight, you will become separate, because you become a witness. You are no more the eye, no more the ear, no more the hands, no more the body. You are a witness. The fight goes on within the body. You are the onlooker. This is the parable meaning, the deepest meaning, but in another sense it is also true. The father against the son, and the son against the father, and they will stand as solitaries. In another sense also this is true, that in a family of five, three will be against the two, two will be against the three. Because whenever a religious person happens in a family, a friction starts. Because for a family, a religious person is the most dangerous person. The family can tolerate anything, but not religion. Because once you become religious, you will not be identified with the body, and the family is related to the body. Your father is your father because of your body. If you think you are the body, then you are related to the father. But if you come to know that you are not the body, who is the father? How you are related to him? The mother has given birth to your body, not to you. You are so identified with the body that you think the mother has given birth to me. When you are not identified, the identification broken, who is the mother? She has not given birth to you, but only to this body which is going to die. So the mother has not given you life, rather on the contrary, the mother has given you one more death. The father has not given you life, he has given you one more possibility to die. Once you are not identified with the body, you are broken from the family, uprooted. So the family can tolerate. If you go to a prostitute, it is okay. Nothing is wrong. Rather, on the contrary, you are getting more and more identified with the body. If you become an alcoholic, if you are a drunkard, it is okay. Because you are getting more and more identified with the body, nothing is wrong in it. But if you become a meditator, if you become a sannyasin, then it is not okay. Then it is difficult because you are being uprooted. Then the power of the family is no more on you, then you are no more part of the family, because you are no more part of this world. So Jesus says, father will be against son, son will be against father, and I have come to disrupt, to divide, to create conflict and friction. This is true. You can worship a Buddha, but ask Buddha's father, he is against him. Ask Buddha's relatives, they are against him. Because this man has gone beyond their control. Not only that, he is helping others also to go beyond the control of the society, the family. The family is the basic unit of the society. When you go beyond society, you have to go beyond family. This is not, there is no meaning in it that you should hate. That is not the point. Or you should go against, that is not the point. That is going to happen. Once you start to find yourself, all that has been before it will be disrupted. There is going to be a chaos. So what you should do? They will pull you back. They will try to bring you back. They will do every effort. What should be done? There are two ways. One is the old way is to escape from them. Don't give in an opportunity. But I think that is no more applicable. The other is be with them, but be an actor. Don't give them the opportunity to know that you are moving beyond them. Move. Let that be your inner journey, but outwardly fulfill all formalities. Touch the feet of the father and the mother and be a good actor. The old way cannot be followed by many. That's why the earth could not become religious. Because how many people can go out of the society? And even if they go out of the society has to take care of them. When Buddha was here, or Mahavir, or Jesus, then thousands left their families. But still, only thousands, millions are left back, and they have to take care. The whole earth cannot become religious if that is the only way. And that is not good also. It can be done in a more beautiful way. And that beautiful way is to be a good actor. A sannyasin must be a good actor. By being a good actor, I mean that you are not related at all, but you go on fulfilling the formalities. Deep down you are uprooted, but you don't give even a hint that you are uprooted. And what is the use of giving the hint? Because they will start trying to change you. Don't give them any chance. Let this be an inner journey. And outwardly you be completely formal. And they will be happy. Because they live in formalities. They live outsidely. They don't need your inner worship. They don't need your inner love. Just the so is enough. These are the two ways. One is that of Buddha and Jesus. Another is of that Janak and me. Be wherever you are. Don't create any outward show about it that you are changing and becoming religious, because that can create trouble. And you may not be strong enough right now. Create the conflict inside, but don't create it out. The inside is too much and enough. It will give you the growth, the needed maturity. The father against the son and the son against the father, and they will stand as solitaries. This word solitary has to be understood deeply. When you become religious, you become solitary. Then there is no society for you. You are alone. And to accept that you are alone is the greatest transformation that can happen to you. Because mind is afraid of being alone. Mind wants somebody else to hang, to cling to. Alone, and you feel a trembling. A fear grips you alone, and immediately you rush towards society, the club, the conference, the sect, the church. Somewhere where crowd is, where you can feel you are not alone. where you can lose yourself into the crowd. That's why crowd has become so important. Go to the race course, go to the cinema hall. But a crowd is needed where you are no more a solitary. You can relax. But a religious man is a solitary because he is trying to reach to his highest peak. He is not to lose himself into others. He has to remember, become more mindful. He has to become more aware and alert. And he has to accept the truth. This is the truth, that everybody is alone. And there is no possibility of any togetherness. Your consciousness is a solitary peak. But that is the beauty of it. You unnecessarily are afraid about it. Think about Everest in a crowd of Everests. Then the whole beauty is lost. The Everest is beautiful and challenging because it is alone, a solitary peak. A religious man is like the Everest. He becomes a solitary peak alone, and he lives and enjoys it. That doesn't mean that he will not move in the society. That doesn't mean that he will not love. On the contrary, only he can love. On the contrary, only he can move in the society, because he is. You are not. How can you love? He can love. But his love is not going to be like a drug. He is not going to be lost. He can share. He can give himself completely and still remain himself. He can give himself to you and still is not lost. His mindfulness remains the innermost peak. There, in that shrine, he remains alone. Nobody enters there. Nobody can enter there. In your innermost core of being, you are alone. The purity of aloneness and the beauty of aloneness. But on the contrary, you feel afraid. Because you have lived in society, you are born in society. You have been brought up by the society. You have completely forgotten that you can be alone also. So to move few days into loneliness is beautiful. Just to feel your loneliness and then come to the marketplace, but bring your loneliness with you. Don't get lost there. Remain aware and alert. Move with the society. Go into a crowd, but remain alone. You can be alone in the crowd if you want, and you can be in the crowd even while you are alone if you want. You can go to the Himalayas and sit there and think of the market. You are in the crowd. It happened when Junaid came to his master. He was alone, and the master was sitting in a temple. And Junaid entered, and the master was alone. And the master said, "Junaid, come alone. Don't bring the crowd with you." So Junaid looked back. Of course, because he thought there is somebody else coming with me, but there was no one. The master laughed and said, "Don't look back. Look within." And then Junaid closed his eyes and found the master was true. He has left the wife, but in the mind, the clinging. He has left his children, but the images are there. And the friends who had come to give him the last send-off, they are still standing in the mind. The master says, "Go out, come alone, because with this crowd, how I can talk?" And Junaid had to wait for 1 year outside the temple to be freed of this crowd. And after 1 year, the master called, "Now Junaid, you are ready, come in. Now you are alone and a dialogue is possible. You can carry the crowd. You can be in the crowd and alone. Try it. The next time you are moving in a big crowd in the market, just feel alone. And you are alone, so there is no problem. You can feel. And once you can feel that you are alone, you have become a solitary. And Jesus says, I have come to make you solitaries, to stand alone. I will give you what the eye has not seen, and what the ear has not heard, and what the hand has not touched, and what has not arisen in the heart of man. Your eyes can see that which is without. They cannot see within. There is no way. Your ears can hear that which is without. They cannot hear within. There is no way. They are outgoing. All senses are outgoing. There is not a single sense which is ingoing. So when all the senses stop functioning, suddenly you are in. There is no sense who goes in. Jesus says, I will give you what the eye has not seen, but first become a solitary. And that is what I mean by a sannyasi. Be solitary. First become a sannyasi. First realize that you are alone. And be at ease with this aloneness. Don't be afraid. Rather enjoy it. Rather see the beauty of it. The silence and the purity and the innocence. No dirt has ever entered there, because nobody has entered into that shrine. It has remained eternally pure. It is virgin. Nobody has been there. Your virginity is hidden within you. Become a sannyasi, a solitary. And then Jesus says, I will give you what the eye has not seen. When you become a solitary, totally alone, suddenly you realize that which no eye can see, no ear can hear. And what the hand has not touched. How can you touch yourself? You can touch the body, but that is not yourself. The hand cannot enter in. It cannot touch your consciousness. There is no way. And the last sentence is the most beautiful ever uttered by any person on this earth. And what has not arisen in the heart of man? Because your soul is even beyond your heart. Of course, your heart is very deep in, but still, as far as your soul is concerned, it is also without. It is not within. Hand is without, eyes are without, heart is also without on the periphery. The innermost core is not even the heart. Hunger arises in your body. Love arises in your heart, not prayer. Prayer is still deeper, deeper than the heart. Hunger is a bodily need. Love is a need of the heart. God, it is a need of the beyond, not even the heart. One has to transcend the mind. One has to transcend the heart also. One has to transcend all peripheries. Only the center remains. And what has not arisen in the heart of man? God has not arisen in the heart of man. In the mind, science arises. philosophy arises. In the heart, art, poetry arises, but not religion. Religion arises at a deeper layer, at the deepest, beyond which there is no goal. Your very center, it is not even the heart. And I will give you that which has not arisen in the heart of man. That which is beyond and beyond and beyond. You cannot catch hold of it. You cannot see. You cannot hear. You cannot even feel it. Here Jesus transcends even those mystics who are of the heart. There are three types of mystics. Mystics of the head. They talk in terms of theology, philosophy. They have proofs for God. There is no proof at all. Or everything is a proof, but no need for a proof. And you cannot prove, because all the proofs can be argued and all the proofs can be proved wrong. Then there are mystics of the heart. They talk of love, the beloved, the divine, the Krishna. They talk in songs, poetry. They are romantic. Their search is deeper than the head, but is still not enough deep. Jesus says, I will give you something which has not arisen even in the heart, where no theology reaches and no poetry has any glimpse of it. Neither logic nor love. Where both stop, I will give you that what has not arisen in the heart of man. This is the deepest, the most profound possibility. And Jesus opens it. But in Christianity it is lost. Christianity started to web theories around it. It became a head affair. Not only a heart affair, it became a head affair. Christians have produced great theologians. Look at Thomas Aquinas' Summa Theologia. Hundreds of volumes of theology. But they missed, because Jesus is not in the head. And because of these head-oriented theologians, mystics who were of the heart were expelled from the church. They were a little deeper. Eckhart, or Francis, they were expelled. They were thought fools, or gone mad, or heretics. Because they were talking of the heart. They were talking of love. And Jesus is missed by both. He is neither head-oriented nor heart-oriented. He is not oriented at all. He says simply, throw all orientations, throw all that is without, and come to the innermost core where only you are, when only the being throbs, where only existence is. And you can come to this. And if you come to this, then every mystery is revealed and all doors are open. But you can miss even on the door. If you remain head-oriented, you may be standing on the door and theorizing. You may be standing on the door and poetizing, talking in poetry and singing. I have heard Mullah Nasruddin went once to a psychiatrist and said, "I am very much puzzled now, do something. It has become impossible. Every night I have a recurrent dream that I am standing on a door and I am pushing and pushing and pushing, and there is a sign on the door, and I push and push and to no end. Every night I wake up perspiring and the door never opens." The psychiatrist started to note whatever he was saying. And after half an hour's talk, the psychiatrist asked, "And tell me, Nasruddin, what is written on the door in the sign?" And Nasruddin said, "It says pull." If on the door it is written, it says pull, then don't go on pushing. Otherwise, recurrent dream, eternally you will push. And there is not a problem at all. Simply look what is written on the door. Jesus says, neither head nor heart is written on the door. It is beyond both. So do one thing, go beyond. Neither fall a victim of logic, intellect, neither become a victim of emotions, sentimentality. Go beyond. Head is also in the body and heart is also in the body. Go beyond. What is beyond? Then there is simple existence. You simply are. Being is without any attributes. That simple beingness is dhyan. That simple beingness is meditation. And that is written on the door. Suddenly the door opens. When you are a simple being, not emotions, nor thoughts, no clouds around you, unclouded, no smoke around the flame, just the flame, you have entered. And what has not arisen in the heart of man, I will give you. Enough for today.